Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nichananda Sri Advaita Gadadhara Sri Vasri Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama Rama Hare Hare. Srimad Bhagavatam 7 verse 46. Dharma Vya Mahabhaga Bhagavir Gauravam Kulam Rijinam Narati Platam Pujam Bhagyam Kipasaha Tat. Therefore, Dharmagya, one who is aware of the principles of religion, Mahabhaga, most fortunate, Bhavadvir, by your good self, Gauravam, glorified, Kulam, family, Rijinam, that which is painful, not Arhati, does deserve, Praptam, for obtaining, Pujam, worshipable, Vandyam, respectable, Abhikshnasaha, constantly. Translation, O most fortunate one who knows the principles of religion, it is not good for you to cause grief to glorious family members who are always respectable and worshipful. Purport is like insult for a respectable family sufficient to invoke grief. Therefore, a cultured man should always be careful in dealing with worshipful family members. Translation, the most fortunate one who knows the principles of religion, it is not good for you to cause grief to glorious family members who are always respectable and worshipful. So, this is an address to Krishna, and he's addressed here as Dharmagya and Mahabhaga, one who knows the principles of religion or Dharma, and one who is most auspicious or most fortunate. Of course, the Supreme Lord automatically is the most fortunate because he controls everything and owns everything. But he's Mahabhaga because he's able to give good fortune to everyone. Hopefully Krishna can solve this problem because he knows the principles of Dharma, and when he acts, he will do something which is proper according to the laws and therefore sets a good example for others. And secondly, Mahabhaga, he is most auspicious, so he will cause most auspiciousness for everyone. There is a description of the problem. That is that if Aswatthama is killed, that particular family will suffer disgrace. Because the family, of course, not Aswatthama, but his family is glorious and worthy of worship, etc. Pujyam, Vandyam. Therefore, one should not cause any pain to that family by killing Aswatthama. That's the main purport of the argument. Therefore, it should be saved somehow or other. So, Krishna is the knower of Dharma, and therefore he knows the principle. What to do. And of course, here the reasons are given why he shouldn't be killed, etc. And of course, there are counter reasons why he should be killed, which Arjuna could present. He is one who knows principles of religion, etc., can be Supreme Lord, or is representative Yudhisthira. Yudhisthira also is representative of Dharmaraj, that is, Yamaraj, who knows Dharma. So he's also fully conversant with everything. And he can also bestow all auspiciousness because he's a great king. So the great devotees of the Lord, the kings, the descendants of Manu, are all empowered by the Lord with some of his Shakti, so that they can institute Dharma properly and produce all auspiciousness for everyone. The question, of course, will come is, what is all auspiciousness? What is good fortune? What is bhaga? So in the material world, of course, we will have some very common aspirations. Money, wealth, good family, nice children, good education. These are good fortune in the material world. So that's what everyone prays for. So we'll find in the Vedic literature also a lot of the prayers are for this purpose. So there's many prayers that say, give me wealth, give me progeny, give me good reputation, give me good family, etc. These are the prayers that people offer when they go to the temple. It, of course, is not only in the Vedic literature. If we go around the world and see different religions, people are praying basically for the same things. In other words, they want happiness within this material world somehow or other. So that is good fortune or good luck for most people. That's the conception of, you know, good fortune, to have good material existence. And the Vedas cater to that, because this is everyone's expectation. So the Vedic literatures are part of it, that is, the Karmakanda section caters to this and allows you to get your comforts of life and encourages you to do so and gives you prayers for doing so. Of course, the other side of the thing is, of this whole procedure, is the gradual elevation of people by helping them fulfill their desires, at the same time giving them certain prescribed methods which will give them some sense control. And at least they have to recognize superior powers by worshipping. In this way, if one worships Devatas or the Supreme Lord and one asks for material things, then one gets material benedictions. In the third chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, as you follow the system and you worship the Devatas, and you can be very happy in this material world. You get everything you desire. So this is an encouragement for people who have great material attachment, which is a normal person in the material world. But simultaneously, because there are regulations in this attainment of material happiness, those regulations help the person advance. So that is why the system of Dharma and Varnashram is considered civilization, because there are some minimum rules you have to follow in order to get the good results. That means sense control. There's certain things you could not do, and there's certain things you should do. There's a line of between sinful activity and pious activity, and one is forbidden to do the sinful activities. So if one follows those rules and regulations, one is considered civilized. And one can gradually advance. This, of course, is a rather slow process, and it takes place birth after birth after birth. So therefore, it does require a very stable social system which lasts generation after generation after generation. And then gradually the jiva can advance, yeah, and skip upwards to higher and higher varnas. Yeah. And in this way, eventually reach sattva-guna. So this is the method of auspiciousness or good fortune for people in the material world. Yes, give them material satisfaction and at the same time regulate their senses according to qualification. So for the sudras, less qualified, less regulation. And for the vaishyas and kshatriyas, more regulation. And for the brahmanas, most regulation. So they have the most rules to follow. So according to qualification, these people also follow rules, and hopefully they will advance upwards through the system. So that is normal good fortune. So that is artha, dharma, and kama. These are the three goals of the varnashram system. But that is not complete because we also have moksha, liberation from the material world. This is a direct contradiction to what goes before it. Get your material satisfaction, fulfill your desires, and support your material body, etc. And on the other hand, we have moksha, to give up everything in the material world. So this is the saving grace, we can say, of the varnashram system, that it balances out the material aspect by telling you ultimately it's all maya, and you have to renounce it all and go for liberation. However, who gets liberation? Very few people. Majority of the people are in tamaguna, and then in sudras, and then we have some vaishyas, fewer kshatriyas, and fewer brahmins at the top. And among the brahmins, a few will go for liberation, take sannyas and go for liberation. So it's the goal, but it's a few people aspire for that goal. And most are in that system, enjoying and gradually working their way through the gunas. So the danger there is one will get lost and get stuck in the middle of the process somewhere and not advance. So, and they'll forget completely about the liberation aspect, which is actually, we can see that happening as Kali Yuga advances. Nobody's heard of sannyas anymore. The brahmanas, very few of them take sannyas. It's a rare thing. Very, very rare. And very few even take vanaprastha, very few people. And that's been so for, maybe 1,000 years or so. It's a rare phenomena. 500 years, of course, 500 years ago. Maybe there are a few vanaprasthas, but even in Lord Chaitanya's time, we don't hear too much about that. We don't see many vanaprasthas around. And a few sannyasis. So it becomes a rarity, a very rare thing. And most of the people are stuck in household life, even the Brahmins. And they don't aspire for anything else. So this whole idea of the the Varnashram system is directed towards liberation. As Kali Yuga goes on, the whole idea gets lost. And in one sense, there's good reason, because who would be attracted to liberation if they're supposed to satisfy themselves in the material world with artha, dharma, and kama? Why would they want to renounce it? It doesn't look very attractive to suddenly have to give up everything. So it's not an attractive proposition also for many people. So to prevent this gradual degradation and getting too attached to the material life, one has to have a qualified system, a qualified government, a qualified king to balance everything out. So therefore, the king must respect the brahminical community. This king must encourage the Brahmins to elevate themselves and renounce everything and practice spiritual life. And if he doesn't do so, then the whole system begins to deteriorate and becomes a material system. So therefore, the strong king is also very necessary. Unfortunately, as we see in the Bhagavatam later on in the later cantos, discusses, well, even in the ninth canto, after Krishna, then after Krishna, in 11th canto and 12th canto, we see the whole disintegration of the line of kings, and they're no longer able to do anything. And then they assassinate each other and put Sudras in charge, and they have no idea of what the goal of that system is. It's only a matter of controlling everybody else and exploiting everybody else. So that way the system more or less fails. So this, of course, is the influence of Kali Yuga. Now, in the whole story here, we'll find that this story leads up to the birth of Parikshit. Asvatthama was going to kill Parikshit, and he couldn't do so because the Lord himself intervened. Parikshit was saved. Then he grew up, and the Pandavas renounced the kingdom because they knew Krishna had disappeared, and they saw the symptoms of Kali Yuga coming. They said, what is the use of staying here? They put Parikshit on the throne, and they went up in the Himalayas. And Parikshit ruled, and then he met Kali personified, and then he prevented Kali from entering into his kingdom while he was alive. And then he was bit by the snake, and then, of course, Bhagavatam was recited by Sukadeva Goswami. So this is basically the story leading up to recitation of the Bhagavatam. So, in the process of doing that, we have different stories here, including how Vasudeva wrote the Bhagavatam, and finally it was given to Parikshit, and through Sukadeva Goswami. So anyway, the line of kings gradually began to disappear, and while Parikshit was there, yes, he could maintain the proper dharma, because he was authorized by the line, coming from the Moon Dynasty. But after him, then gradually the lines decreased and decreased, and then the asuras got stronger and stronger as Kali Yuga began, and whole line disappeared. However, the principles of religion are not lost. The Supreme Lord is responsible also for everybody, even Kali Yuga. And Kali Yuga, of course, comes 1,000 days and 1,000 times in the day of Brahma. So the Lord is prepared for all this also. So he makes arrangements for establishing religious principles and the principles of bhakti. So the other day I mentioned, of course, we have to distinguish between the dharma aspect and the bhakti aspect. So a lot of the dharma aspect is concerned with satisfying the people so they can live comfortably, whatever, and at the same time gradually elevate them. The process of bhakti is a process which is independent of this. It can mix with it, but also it's independent. Even if the system doesn't exist, you can do the bhakti. So of course, normally they go together in Satya Yuga, Treta Yuga, and Dwapara Yuga. The two systems go together. The kings are dharmic, and they're also devotees. But as Kali Yuga comes, the kings are gone. And the Dharma starts disintegrating very rapidly. So what to do? Bhakti can still exist. So we don't have kings anymore, but at least we have individuals, devotees, who can carry on bhakti. So we don't have lines of kings establishing Dharma and carrying on that whole system as for country. But at least we do have individuals, devotees. This also has a little bit of a tradition, just like we have the line of kings coming down. So we have lines of parampara, that is, disciplic succession carried on. That is, the teachings of bhakti get carried on in certain lines. So this is the saving grace for Kali Yuga. Though the qualified kings are not there to enforce the Dharma so that this other system can be followed, and therefore people are going to, in general, be societies can be very discontent and unstable, always subject to dissatisfaction and revolution and whatnot. This, we have to face that in Kali Yuga. Still, it's not hopeless, because the Lord makes this arrangement through devotees. So that is one thing, that bhakti is preserved. And, of course, the Lord does come in Kali Yuga also, as avatar, but channa. He is hidden because he should be Tri Yuga. He shouldn't be in Kali Yuga, actually. So therefore, he comes as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu as the Yuga avatar. But he is covered. That is, he doesn't proclaim himself to be the Supreme Lord, and he doesn't display great powers openly to everyone. To a few associates he does so, but not to everyone. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is called the Channa avatar, or the covered avatar, because he's not acting like Supreme Lord, he's acting like a devotee, Bhakta avatara. He's a Supreme Lord acting as a devotee. And of course it's good fortune, because Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is not an ordinary avatar. He's not an ordinary Yuga Dharma avatar, Yuga avatar. He is a Yuga avatar, but he actually isn't. Because he's same as Krishna. And Krishna also is an avatar in one sense, because he appears in the material world, but he's not an avatar because he's Swayam Bhagavan. So this is the whole import of the Bhagavatam, to distinguish Krishna from everybody else. So we have in the later on, Sutta Goswami, in response to the sage of Naimisaranya, begins to discuss the avatars. So he lists all the avatars. And when he comes to Krishna, then he says, Krishna is tu Bhagavan Swayam. So he distinguishes Krishna from everybody else by addressing the Swayam Bhagavan. So that makes him very special. Why is he special? Special because he actually is the source of everything. So Jiva Goswami goes to great pains in the Krishna Sandarbha to show how in the Bhagavatam, Krishna is the source of everything. So he is the source of all the avatars. Of course, we can say that the avatars come from Vishnu, because we have Garbhadakshay Vishnu, Kshiradakshay Vishnu, and most generally the avatars come through the Purusha avatars. But not so with Krishna. He does not come through the Purusha avatar. He is the source of the Purusha avatar. So we see, of course, in the 10th canto that is illustrated very nicely. Though Krishna is supreme, and his supreme qualities are madhurya, sweetness, sweet relationship with his devotees, which do not involve display of power, still, because he is Swayam Bhagavan, he also has more display of powers than anybody else, any of the avatars. Which sounds like a contradiction, because then how can he be the sweetest also? Because then immediately show power, the sweetness decreases. But the nature of Krishna is he's very clever, so he can do both things simultaneously. And that he does in Vrindavan. So there he shows his great sweetness, his relationship with Yasoda and Nanda. And they think of him only as their child and not as Supreme Lord or anything. And they take care of him as their child. And when Krishna does show some remarkable activities, no, it's not Krishna. He didn't do that. Vishnu did it. For instance, when Nanda Maharaj was captured by the Varuna servants and pulled under the water, and then everybody yelled out, Maharaj Nanda's gone, and they cried for Krishna. And Krishna came and he dove into the water and he went down and he saw Nanda Maharaj there with Varuna. And when Krishna arrived, then Varuna began apologizing because he recognized Krishna. And all the servants, they also offered their respects and they all apologized. And Nanda Maharaj was looking at all this. Why the devotee is paying the respects to Krishna? And he was surprised. But then, of course, Krishna and Nanda Maharaj, they went back. And then after that, Nanda Maharaj was discussing with the cowherd man, well, this is what I saw. I saw Krishna there with all the devatas were there, and they were offering their respects to Krishna. I think he must be the Supreme Lord. And they began discussing like that. And they discussed and discussed and discussed, and then finally said, no, it cannot be possible. Because he's my son. He's my son, and he cannot be the Supreme Lord. So that's how he concluded. In spite of Krishna showing all of this, still he will not believe. And when Krishna lifts Govardhan Hill, everybody sees him standing there with his little finger, and effortlessly he's holding up that huge mountain, and everybody's worried that he's going to get tired, or that when his hand begins to shake when he sees the gopis or whatever, then they think he's going to drop the mountain or something because of he's getting weak. And they try to hold it up with sticks and everything like that. But Krishna is completely transcendental and he can do anything. So then they, afterwards, they began to wonder again, well, how is it possible that Krishna could do this? And when people ask Mother Yasoda, he said, oh, that was nothing because Krishna didn't do it. Balaram helped him. Nanda Maharaj helped him. So he didn't do it by himself. So it wasn't such a big thing after all. I mean, Krishna's too small. So in this way, by their great affection for Krishna, even if Krishna displays powers, it gets hidden. Huh? But, as I say, Krishna does display great powers. In fact, in the story of the Brahma Mohana Lila, there we see how Brahma got bewildered by Krishna. Brahma tried to bewilder Krishna by stealing the calves and cowherd boys, and he hid them in a cave, put him to sleep more or less for a few seconds of his time, but it happened to be 1 year of our time. And then he thought, you know, I can confuse Krishna by doing this. And the reason he thought that was because when he saw Krishna playing with the cowherd boys and taking his lunch, they were in the forest and they opened their lunch packs and they looked at all their food and they were eating the food and exchanging their food, and Krishna had curd rice in one hand and food pickles in the other hand and whatever, and he had food all over his body and they were throwing food at each other, everything. Then Brahma thought, how can this be supreme lord? He had heard the devatas glorifying him after he killed Agasura, and Agasura's soul had entered into Krishna and got mukti. Then he came down out of curiosity. Oh yes, Krishna's doing something far out, very fantastic, so I'll look. And he came down and he saw Krishna playing with the cowherd boys and like a little boy. So then he became very doubtful. How can this be the Supreme Lord? Eh? We offer sacrifices with great formality to the Supreme Lord and chant Purusha Shukta mantras, etc. And here he is, smeared with food, contaminated, food in his right hand, food in his left hand, etc. How can he be God? Eh? So then he thought, I will test him and see. And then he took all the calves and cowherd boys away when Krishna wandered off, and then couldn't find the calves, came back, cowherd boys were gone. But what did Krishna do? He made more cowherd boys and calves, that's all. He turned himself into the calves and cowherd boys, and they all went home. Nothing had happened. And this continued for 1 year, and nobody could detect it. The mothers could not detect that their sons were different. They were so exact. And the cows could not detect that the calves were not their calves, but Krishna. They couldn't see the difference at all. They couldn't recognize any difference. No one could do that for 1 year. But because of Krishna's uncontrollable nature, there was a slight difference. The slight difference was that the mothers and fathers became very attracted to their children, more so than ever before, because it was actually Krishna. And they were so attached to their children. And the cows were attached to those calves. And so attached they were that even though they got new calves within that 1 year, they didn't have any attachment for the new calves. They liked the older calves. And they were running after them, trying to give them all the milk. So after 1 year, then Balaram finds it. Nobody recognizes this strange phenomena of why the cows are attracted to the older calves and why the cowherd men are so attracted and attached to their sons suddenly. And then after 1 year, Balaram was herding the calves and whatever, and with the cowherd boys in Govardhan, near Govardhan, and the cowherd men were on top of the hill with the cows. And when the cows saw those calves, which were actually Krishna, they came running down the hill. And the cowherd man got angry and they ran after them and tried to stop them. And they couldn't stop them. And when they got to the bottom of the hill, they were very angry at the cows. You know, they got cut by the grass and the rocks and everything running down the hill after the cows. But suddenly, they saw their sons, who were actually Krishna. And they began embracing their sons in ecstasy. And they forgot all about the anger to the cows. So Balaram saw this and said, this is very strange. How is it they got such attraction for their sons suddenly? And how is it those cows have such attraction for their calves? And then he thought, maybe there's some asuras disguising themselves as the calves or something or whatever.
the cows or nothing. And he said, it cannot be, because I know, I can see when the asuras, you know, put on a disguise and can see through their maya. And then he thought, maybe it's some rishis. Maybe they are suddenly coming here and disguising themselves for some reason. Or maybe it's the devatas. Maybe they disguise themselves and they want to see Krishna or something. He said, no, I can also detect what the devatas are doing. And he thought and thought and thought, and then finally said, nobody can put me into maya. Nobody can fool me. Except Krishna. must be Krishna's trick. And he looked very hard, and then he saw everything was Krishna. So, of course, that all is also illustrates that even Balaram is less than Krishna, and Krishna can bewilder him also. Anyway, Brahma came back after that. And then Brahma saw that he was expecting to see Krishna bewildered. Where are the calves and where are the cowherd boys? But Krishna was playing with the calves and cowherd boys. Brahma looked and he said, well, how is that possible? Because I put them in the cave. And then he went to the cave and looked in the cave, and there they were. They were all sleeping there. All the calves and the cowherd boys were sleeping in the cave. The same ones. And then he looked out there in the field and they were playing with Krishna again. He said, how is this possible? And then he thought, which ones are the real cowherd boys and which are the real calves? Are the real ones inside the cave or are the real ones outside? Or are they both maya? And the real ones are somewhere else. And he got really confused. And he was so confused he became stunned and he just stood there. So at that time, and then Krishna was very merciful to him. And when he looked at those calves and cowherd boys, what did he see? They all turned into Vishnu. And the Vishnus were creators of universes. And there were how many calves and how many cowherd boys? Millions of them. Millions of calves and millions of cowherd boys. And suddenly they were all Vishnu forms. And these Vishnus were being worshipped by the, you know, the devatas and the asuras and the rakshasas, and the whole universe was there with, you know, worshipping these forms. They were the creators of universes. But then he looked again, and suddenly they all disappeared. And there were the calves and cowherd boys, and then suddenly they all disappeared, and only Krishna was there. So then he understood, Krishna is the source of all the universes and all the Vishnus that create the universes, and everything within the universe, all the 14 planetary systems and all the material elements, Mahatattva down to Earth, and all the rivers and the trees and the continents and the Bhumandala and upper planetary systems, lower planetary systems, all the living entities. It's all within Krishna. So in this way, Brahma understood Krishna is the source of everything. He's the source of all the avatars. He's the source of all the Vishnus who create all the avatars in the material world, including himself. He's a guna avatar. So he understood the greatness of Krishna. So in the Bhagavatam, many times we'll see this, how it is illustrated, how Krishna is actually the source of everything. It doesn't mean, of course, that Krishna creates avatars or whatever, because they're non-different from him, and they're also eternal. But what it does mean is that ultimately everything is under his shelter, and by his will, they appear at certain times and certain places, that's all. And he is the ultimate one in control of everything. So the Purusha avatars will manifest their forms by his will. And by his will, the Purusha avatars then manifest the other avatar forms, etc. So in this way, he is the cause of everything, even though they have eternal forms and they're non-different from him. So the whole purpose of the Bhagavatam, therefore, is to show how Krishna is the very special form of the Supreme Lord. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is non-different from him. He is also Supreme Lord Krishna, but slightly different, because he is Channa Avatar, and he takes the mood of Radha, and therefore he's no longer black, he turns golden. But he's actually Krishna, with the mood of Radha, the devotee. So it is a special form of the Yuga avatar that comes. This is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So he's not the normal Yuga avatar. He comes after Krishna appears in the material world once in the day of Brahma. And for the people of Kali Yuga to deliver them, and then of course, he gives a Yuga Dharma, Nam Sankirtan, but he also gives a special name, that is the name of Krishna. And more than that, he also gives special, something special, because his purpose is not simply to give Yuga Dharma, it is to give Krishna and Radha, Radha Krishna. So this is his great mercy, that he allows the people of Kali Yuga to get a realization of Radha Krishna by presenting the Hare Krishna mantra. So therefore the Supreme Lord, though he is covered in Kali Yuga, he is very merciful in the form of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and he delivers the people by delivering the highest realization of Supreme Lord, that is Swayam Bhagavan Krishna, and his highest rasa, Madhurya Rasa. So therefore the Lord never abandons the jivas, though dharma is no longer intact. One leg of dharma is there, and that's also disintegrating. Still, the Lord's mercy is there in the form of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his teachings and his mercy. So we're fortunate to get that mercy. So dharma may disappear, but we should not be discouraged, and we should stick to the chanting of the name Nam Sankirtan and follow the instructions of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Okay. Hare Krishna.
Are all the Vishnu avatars Bhagavan?
There are a few which are Shaktivesh avatars, like Narada, Kumaras, Prithu, Parsaram, and Buddha is, and the Kali Yuga avatar also is generally, because it's Channa, right? Or it's not the Supreme Lord, so it's a Shaktivesh avatar usually. So the others are called Bhagavan, but they don't show all the powers. So therefore, in the in Chaitanya Charitamrita also, and in the Lagu Bhagavatamrita, that Rupa Goswami classifies them as, you know, Prabhava forms, Vaibhava forms, Purna forms, and then ultimately Krishna's at the top. So according to the amount of powers they show, they're classified as, you know, lesser or more in the sense of manifesting more powers. So generally the sages like Kapila and persons like Mohini, they don't show much powers. They do a particular thing, and they are there for, you know, a little while, but not long. So they're put at the bottom, Hamsa also. And those that show more powers are put a little higher than that. They stay a little longer, show a little more powers. Those that show more powers again, like Hayagriva or Kurma or Matsya, are put a higher, Varaha, put in a higher level. And then finally we get at the top, we have Narasimha, and then Rama, and then Krishna at the top. So it's a matter of manifesting the powers. Not that they don't have the powers, because they're all God, and God is God, He's one. But God in some forms manifests lesser qualities and lesser powers, etc. In others He manifests more powers. So those are distinguished from the Paramatma forms. The Paramatma forms are specifically functional for creation of the material world. That is Mahavishnu glances, and then the whole process of manifesting from Prakriti, the element starts, and then Garbhadakshaya Vishnu manifests in Brahma, and the Kshirodakshaya witnesses all the jivas, etc. So that's all functional for material world, so that's considered as Paramatma feature, which is lesser because there's no lila and relationships established in those forms.
Krishna comes directly, he doesn't come to Purusha avatars. But Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita that he has nothing to do with this material world. So how do we understand? Does he come through Purusha avatars but still perform the same pastimes?
What's that?
In the material world, when he comes, does he come through Purusha avatars, or he comes
directly? He's direct. He is the source of the Purusha avatars. But he comes in the material world, but the nature of any form of Bhagavan, whether it's a Purusha avatars or any other avatar, is they're never touched by the world. They're not jivas. They can never be influenced.
They are completely different from jivas, who are small particles. So they never get influenced by Maya. So the peculiar nature of the avatar is they appear in the material world. They interact with the material world because often they kill demons and whatnot. And everybody can see them. But they're not material. So that's the peculiar nature of them. They look like they're material because they come in the material world. Everybody can see them and interact with the material world, but they're not. So that's the achintya nature of the Lord, that he can interact with the material world and still not be touched by it at all. Garbhadaksha Vishnu, Kshiradaksha Vishnu. Yeah. Less power, less power, less power, we can say.
So
manifested.
All the three avatars,
yeah.
How do we understand the potency?
Less. Yeah. So the Mahavishnu is considered the most fuller manifestation. His expansions will show a little less, Garbhadaksha Vishnu's, and then Kshiradaksha Vishnu's will show a little less. Yeah? Because we see that Mahavishnu manifests the most power by glancing over Prakriti itself. And that Prakriti is the material for all the millions and billions of universes. One Garbhadaksha Vishnu form enters into one universe. Yeah. So Mahavishnu is the controller of billions of universes, infinite universes. A Garbhadaksha Vishnu is only within one universe. And Kshiradaksha Vishnu is in there also, and he's in all the jivas within the universe. So we find gradually their scope becomes a little more narrow.
In terms of opulence of the Vishnu form, uh-huh.
Well, they show less potency. Doesn't mean they're not God. They're still God. But for that particular function, they show those powers. In other words, they're not showing rasas and all things like that. Bhagavan forms, you establish a relationship with them, serve them, and this, you know, have pastimes with them. The function of the Purusha avatars is not like that. It's only the creative functions they're doing. When we start worshipping the Vishnu function with rasa, then he becomes, you know, the Vishnu form in the spiritual world. Same, actually. But because we establish a relationship, then he's Bhagavan, and you go to Vaikuntha and you establish dasya rasa with him. But when you see him with Paramatma, then he's simply functioning to create the material world. He's with the soul also. He's inside the soul even. He's everywhere. Yeah. He witnesses all the activities of all the souls at all times.
So when we say the soul leaves the body, so the
Paramatma also goes with him.
So whatever the condition, the hellish condition, that time also.
He witnesses everything, but he's not affected by anything. And the Lord is everywhere. He's in Svargaloka, he's in Brahmaloka, he's in Patalaloka, he's everywhere. He's in the Garbhadak Ocean, he's everywhere.
Maharaj, you said, you mentioned that Krishna appears once in the day of Brahma, and after Krishna appears in the same
Lord Chaitanya comes.
So is it that Ram also appears once in the day of Brahma?
Yeah.
So what is so special about this yuga cycle? Like in Vaivasvata Manu's yuga cycle, I think all the three appear. So is there something special that they are
Three? Rama appears, Krishna appears, and Lord Chaitanya appears. Narasimha appears in the previous Manvantara, Chakshusha Manvantara. Why special? I don't know. Maybe noontime is special or something. noontime of Brahma or something. Midday. So this is like the sun is at the high point, so therefore maybe Krishna appears for that reason. I don't know. There's no explanation why Vaivasvata Manvantara happens like that. So it's all scheduled.
Swayambhuva Manvantara has a lot of avatars there also. Yeah? And then Chakshusha Manvantara has many. And then Vaivasvata Manvantara has many of the Leela avatars, that is. And after that, it doesn't really mention too many at all. But all along, every time, the Yuga avatars are appearing all the time, all the way throughout the day of Brahma. And the Manvantara avatars also are there for 71 Yuga cycles for each period, 14 times in the day of Brahma.
So after this Yuga cycle, there will be no longer any Leela avatars appearing?
Oh, well, we can include Kalki. Some people say that Kalki comes every Kali Yuga. And some say Buddha does also. So those Leela avatars would come.
When they don't appear, who establishes the religious
label? Chaitanya Mahaprabhu? Oh, the Yuga avatar who is called Krishna in his blackish form. He comes.
And you said he's Shaktivesh?
Who?
Is that Krishna existed before?
Oh, yeah, in Kali Yuga. Yeah, the Shaktivesh avatar. Yeah.
That Krishna is.
Yeah, it's not the same Krishna. Yes, the Shaktivesh form, because the Lord does not appear in Kali Yuga directly. So the Shaktivesh avatars appear then, like Buddha and Kalki and the Yuga avatar.
Is it the chant by Krishna then?
Generally not, no. They'll chant other things because Krishna is not around, so they'll chant other forms of Vishnu names.
Maharaj, you described Brahma Vimohana Leela. So obviously, Lord Brahma, after these prayers, after that only he recited that Brahma Samhita prayers.
No, Brahma Samhita prayers are separate. They appear, that's after, during the creation, more or less, it appears that he recited those prayers, one of his creations, maybe this creation or whatever.
So that means after the prayers also he got
After the prayers.
After the Brahma reciting his prayers.
Yeah.
The Brahma Vimohana, so that means...
It is said that he actually, because in the Bhagavatam it says, and when it describes the appearance of Brahma, and then the Lord tells him that, and he gives him the Chatasloki, etc., for verses of the Bhagavata, and he also says, you cannot be bewildered in your lifetime. So then how did he get bewildered by Krishna? And so then the commentary is that it's not a regular bewilderment, it's Krishna's will only. It's not that he can be blamed for being inferior. It was yoga maya, more or less, of Krishna that he got bewildered. That's all. Because Krishna guaranteed you're not going to get bewildered by maya.
Does Lord Chaitanya come in every
day? No. Yeah, only once in a day of Brahma.
Once in a day.
Like Krishna also once in a day of Brahma.
In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Aham Bija Prada Pita. Is that Lord Shiva?
I don't know. Hard to say, I don't know. What does Prabhupada say?
He talks about, in the purport he mentions the glance, he says, Shambhu, the glance, and doesn't say Lord Shiva directly.
Oh, okay. The commentary of Jiva Goswami in the Paramatma Sundarbha on Sambhu is it's not Shiva, it's Vishnu. It's another form of Vishnu, that's all. Form of Mahavishnu, because it's only the Supreme Lord that causes creation, not Shiva.
Would you say understand that Mahadev is the husband of Durga?
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
So she's the mother?
In a sense, yeah. She is Prakriti. Personification of Prakriti or whatever, and Shiva is intimately connected with her, and he's in charge of Tamagun. But that Sambhu that manifests in the Brahma Samhita is not considered to be Shiva according to Jiva Goswami. And because he says it's only the Supreme Lord that creates, and Shiva is not a creator, he doesn't create all the universes, it's Vishnu that does it. The vibhutis show less powers and they're temporarily empowered jivas, whereas the Shaktivesh avatars are actually eternal. Like Narada Muni's in the spiritual world, Kumaras are also in the spiritual world, they manifest in the material world at certain times. Whereas the vibhutis are like devatas and sages, and they're appointed every Manvantara period, 14 times in the day of Brahma. We get a new set of devatas, a new set of rishis, a new set of Manus, another Manu, every 14 times in the day of Brahma comes. So they're replaced, a post, and then powers are given by the Supreme Lord for them. So they're called vibhutis because they get special powers, but less than, and not eternal, like Chakravesh avatars.
So when Srila Prabhupada, the second or third canto, in the creation process, when it is described, Prabhupada mentions about some prototype demigods that were there along with existing Brahma.
Before Brahma or after Brahma? Well, there is, like we have in the creation of the material universe, when we have the elements coming out from Ahankara and Sattva-gun, we get the mind and devatas. That's the, we can say also prototype devatas. Not the jivas, obviously, but at least the bodies and their functions are there. And then we have the senses coming out of Rajagun. And the sense objects and the gross material elements coming out of Tamagun. Ahankar, like that. So those are, we can say, a prototype devatas also. There's also a prototype Shiva outside the universe, and then he appears within the universe because he's also, Shiva's also got an eternal body. So there's a prototype Shiva outside the universe manifests within each universe.
But Brahma had his last day, like Lord Shiva also has this, he's not a Jiva Tattva, he's not Vishnu Tattva.
Brahma.
Shiva.
Shiva is actually the Supreme Lord, but he manifests significantly less powers than the forms of the Lord. So he's put in a separate category. And his functions are rather limited. That is, he's in control of tamaguna and false ego and destruction of the material world and things like that. And it looks as if he's contaminated, but he's not because he's Supreme Lord. But he closely associates with material energy and tamagun. So therefore he's put in a separate class.
But
he's not a jiva.
He's not doesn't have to die in like a Brahman dies like.
No, he cannot die. No. But sometimes jivas also within a particular universe may take the role of Shiva. Sometimes. Just as the Supreme Lord may also take the role of Brahma sometimes. So sometimes Brahma is the Supreme Lord also, but usually he's jiva. And that jiva has a temporary body as Brahma.
Bhagavad Gita, this Udrana Shankarasashmi, he says, so which one Lord Krishna is referring to? Afudra and Shankara?
Oh, well, there's 11 Rudras. So I suppose he means the main one, the main form then.
So when we say Lord Shiva, that represents.
It could refer to any of them, actually. But generally, I think referring to the main Shiva rather than these expansions.
Maharaj, in the third canto it is mentioned that when Mahavishnu glances on Prakriti, then Shambhu carries that glance. So you are mentioning that that Shambhu is Vishnu.
That's also Vishnu, yeah. According to Jiva Goswami. In the Paramatmasandarbha, also in the Brahma Samhita. It looks like it is Shiva because it talks about Maheshwara, etc. But then his commentary is this, this means Supreme Lord, not Shiva.
You mentioned that our fortune in Kaliyuga is to be able to take shelter of the Mahaprabhu. So how do we take advantage of that fortune?
Follow his instructions and chant Hare Krishna. Associate with devotees and follow the parampara. When we worship Lord Chaitanya, we don't separate his worship from Krishna. In other words, Lord Chaitanya comes to reveal Radha and Krishna, so we cannot just say, I'm going to worship Lord Chaitanya, not Krishna. The whole purpose of Lord Chaitanya is to reveal Radha Krishna to us, so therefore we get both realizations. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, in the spiritual world you can have two forms, one with Lord Chaitanya and one with Krishna. So we can simultaneously participate in both leelas. We're still one jiva. Because the souls are particles of consciousness which have their own independence in one sort because they have their own center of consciousness. I exist. It's not that we are thinking, I am Krishna, because even though we are sparks of Krishna, we have our own independent identity. Separate. But the definition of the jiva is, he's always dependent on the Lord. That is, and I think in Sri Sampradaya it's called shesha, they are dependents, or dasa. They are dasas at all times. They can, that relationship can never be removed. So they're always dependent upon Supreme Lord. So therefore, ultimately, the consciousness and the sense of I, and whatever they do, their sense, their power for experiencing, the power to know, the power to act, is only by the permission of the Lord, because they're dependent. So in that sense, he's the soul, the soul.
When we study Brahma Samhita, then we understand that in Goloka also there is a Navadvipa.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. If you worship Lord Chaitanya, then you go to the spiritual world and you can participate in his lila, and right next to it is Goloka. So there we have the two places.
Yeah, my question is that what is the scope of Vipralamba in the spiritual world?
Vipralamba. There's no extended Vipralamba in the spiritual world. There's temporary separation, just like Krishna hides himself with the gopis in the Rasa Lila. So there is separation there, and they have. That's enough, because 1 second is like a yuga for them. So it's 1 hour. Also, it is intolerable for them. So that's one type of separation during their Rasa Lila pastimes or whatever. Other type of separation is in the daytime. Sometimes Krishna is not there, because he goes out in the fields and herds the cows and whatever. So he's not with the gopis for some time. So that is also separation.
Specifically to Mahaprabhu's lila, then often we hear that Lord Krishna does some pastimes in Bhoomi Vrindavan, which he doesn't do in.
Well, killing demons and things like that.
But similarly, is there a varnan? Is there a description of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu that something he does here, but they are not like Jagaya and Madaya? Are these going on in the?
Well, obviously not, because we can't have drunkards in the spiritual world or whatever. Demons, etc. He converts the Buddhists and the Muslims or whatever, the Patans and whatever, so we won't have those molestas in the spiritual world. Yes, in the material world we have special pastimes where Krishna kills demons, and also we have Krishna leaving Vrindavan. So he doesn't leave Vrindavan in the spiritual world, obviously, because he has separate places, but he's always in Dwarka, he's always in Mathura, and he's always in Vrindavan in the spiritual world. So he has three forms there also. So he never leaves those places. So therefore that Vipralamba, an extended form where Krishna goes for many years and then finally returns later on, those type of lilas you won't find. Or meeting at Kurukshetra you won't have there in the spiritual world again. So what happens generally is the daily pastimes. Krishna gets up in the morning and then he goes out in the cowherd field, and then he comes back in the evening, and during that time he has pastimes, and then at night time he has Rasa Lila and other pastimes. So those are the regular pastimes of Krishna.
How do you understand Krishna's baby form? In the sense that in Krishna's pastimes, his form appears eternal.
Yeah. All of the forms are eternal. So the baby form is eternal, and if it grows a little bit, that form is also eternal. And it's always manifested in some universe. So his activities are also changeable in the sense that he moves his hand, there's a change, but Krishna should not change. So the idea is that each pastime will have a beginning and an end, but that doesn't make any sense, because everything should be eternal. So actually, each pastime itself is eternal. Each part of the pastime is eternal. And therefore, in one universe, we go through in a sequence of time, but actually, the same pastime is being replicated in another universe almost simultaneously in sequence. So the same activity is going on in universe after universe after universe after universe after universe. So the birth of Krishna takes place, is always taking place every second in some universe. So it's an eternal event. And lifting Govardhan Hill is taking place eternally, one after another in every universe, like this. So everything's eternal.
Yeah. But again, when it comes to Goloka Vrindavan, how do we understand that Krishna is at the
childhood Leela as well as.
Oh, well, he doesn't. He's in Kaishar form in the spiritual world. Yeah. So that's another difference between the material and the spiritual world, that he manifests different forms here so that the Vatsalya Rasa can be more intensely expressed with the childhood form, which is not there in the spiritual world. Or the Sakya form is the Pauganda form. So that, when Krishna's 5 years old, that is not manifest in the spiritual world. Also, it's here only. So then the Sakya Rasa can be more intensely expressed.
So sampradaya where the primary deity worship is Veddu Gopal, for example, in the Vallabhacharya sampradaya,
mm-hmm.
then what is their prayojana when they go to the spiritual world? They will not be able to speak.
Oh, that you'll have to ask them. Of course, they can also participate in earthly pastimes of Krishna's or other universe or whatever like that, if he desires to. Okay. Hare Krishna.
Yeah.